and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Probably the most important and impactful piece of political advice ever given was, it's the economy, stupid. Indeed, the economic and financial condition of any public transcends ideology. And it is ideology, neoliberalism to be specific, that is driving the world into recession. Crosstalking the global economy, I'm joined by my guest, Michael Hudson in New York. He is a professor of economics at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, as well as author of Forgive Them Their Debts. In North Florida, we have Tom Luongo. He is publisher of Gold, Goats, and Guns blog and newsletter. And in Los Angeles, we cross to Pai Ian. He is a strategic planning consultant, a private equity advisor, and an independent economic analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. And this is certainly a blue ribbon panel. I thank all three of you for joining me today. Michael, let me go to you first here. There seems to be a growing consensus that there is a recession is coming, particularly for the West, maybe for the entire global economy. What makes this recession different, if it is different whatsoever? Because I think all of us would agree a lot of the bad economic news that we're experiencing, particularly in the West again, is self-inflicted. Michael.
Well, when people talk about recessions, they think of a business cycle going up and down and then recovering. And this isn't a business cycle. This is a change in the way the world is being organized. For one thing, every recession since World War II ended has recovered with a much higher level of debt. And today, the level of debt has grown so much that domestic markets, both in the United States and Europe, the global South are unable to grow. The debt problem has got much worse because the U.S. dollar is going up against the European currencies and the global South currencies, making it much harder for these countries to pay their dollar-denominated debts when they fall due this fall. And what's really causing a break in the chain of payments and making things much worse than they are now is the fact that there are going to be continued higher energy prices, higher food prices, and countries do not have enough money both to stay solvent, to feed their populations, and pay their foreign debts. So there are going to be a lot of defaults, and the only way that they can really get the food and the energy they need is by dealing with Russia and its economic allies. And so this recession isn't going to be simply a return back to the normal. Mm-hmm. It's going to be new economic institutions, a BRICS bank, all sorts of swap agreements, not really payment in dollars. And it'll be a de-dollarized realignment of much of the world politically.
Well, Pai, kind of to continue with the same theme there, I mean, when we come out of this, if and when we come out of it, because we're just going into something like this, is how much is it going to change the world? Because at the epicenter of this is the West right now, and even more specifically, Europe. I don't see what their recovery trajectory is, okay? Because they're cutting off all kinds of options because of ideology, because of neoliberalism and other ridiculous things that have nothing to do with self-interest. They're leaving themselves behind, and it's intentional. Go ahead in Los Angeles.
I think the ideology goes much deeper. What we're going to expect, and more than likely by longer-term design, are sweeping asset consolidations transatlantically under designed stagflation in order to pave the way for a worldwide digitally integrated monetary system, artificial intelligence-based computing standards, transhumanistic adventurism with technology and biology miscegenating, and cubing the sphere, if you will, or circling the square in the esoteric sense for very hermetically ambitious transatlantic occultist elites.
Yeah, but if we continue with that, Tom, that means the definite decline of the West as the global hegemon. I mean, that includes the United States. What Pai just said there is a complete reordering of the chessboard. Go ahead.
No, I agree that that's what their plan is. I don't know that they're actually going to be able to pull it off. And I think the key is, as Michael pointed out, it's that the and you pointed out, the epicenter here is in Europe. And the question now is, in my mind, and I've been watching this carefully, is to ask, has there been a break in the factions within the elites, as you would, I would call them, the Davos crowd, right? Is there a break between the Anglosphere and the European sphere? I see the Federal Reserve doing everything that no one wants them to do, which is raise interest rates, be aggressive, engage in QT, and limit Congress's ability to continue to spend and make the United States into what it looks like a fiscal laughingstock. And I see the exact opposite now happening on Capitol Hill, that there's a political pushback from behind the scenes that's allowing the Fed and the commercial banking sector in the U.S. to say, no, we're not going to go for central bank digital currencies. No, we're not going to go for transhumanist technocratic global control and all the rest of that. And to Michael's point, yes, we're going to see a de-dollarized world. But I think actually, in many ways, I think the Fed wants out of that fully dollarized world. If you want my
Michael, traditionally we looked at the Fed and, you know, and the European Central Bank for cues here. I mean, is this way too big for them to handle right now? Because I would say they're actually the source of a lot of these problems, and now we're turning them to solve them.
Well, the problem cannot be solved monetarily. The problem's structural. The United States doesn't produce its own manufacturers anymore. There are going to be a lot of breaks in the supply chain for key materials, especially the sanctions against Russia, not only oil and food, but also titanium and helium and all the other things. The problem with the central bank in America is they worry here that wages are going up, and they're raising the interest rates just to say, you think this is a recession? We need more of a recession. We can't let this recovery raise wages here. And the heads of the Federal Reserve have been very, very clear. We want more unemployment. We want to keep the wages down. And so they raise the interest rates. That sucks money out of Europe and the global South by simple arbitrage. People can borrow cheap in their countries and lend to a higher rate here. And that's pushing the dollar up. And that means that because copper and raw materials are priced in dollars in the West, that all of a sudden makes all the raw materials more expensive, as if it's a boom for countries outside the United States, forcing their business into a squeeze and into a recession.
Well, Tom, let's talk about the impact of these sanctions here, because this was a craven decision on the part of the West to do this.
Agreed.
And the way I look at it is that the conflict in the Ukraine will come to end eventually here, but the sanctions won't, okay? Out of hubris, out of pride, out of ideology, whatever ridiculous reason they have at the moment, okay? Because they are ridiculous right now. This is a cue to the rest of the global economy that structurally it is going to change forever. There's no, say, I really like what Michael had to say. You know, we look at traditionally recession is, you know, there's a depression, the economy gets depressed and then it recovers. But this time it's going to be very, very different when all of the dust settles. Go ahead.
No, it really is. And the sanctions, the seizing of Russia's foreign exchange reserves and all of that have done irreparable damage to the confidence of the old system. Right, that those things used to be considered inviolate, and that doing business in dollars, you know, your money was safe. That was part of the reason why the dollar was able to take over the world, because everybody, you know, everybody believed that that holding dollars was the safe thing, that U.S. debt was not going to be defaulted on, yada yada yada. Now we're in a situation today where that trust has been gone, that trust has been broken, and you know, in an open market, once trust is gone, it takes years to build up and a day to destroy. Which is exactly what's happened here. It took years to build up trust in the dollar and the whole existing system. And then we've weaponized SWIFT, we've weaponized foreign exchange reserves, right, and all the rest of it. So no, there's going to be a complete changeover. Now, when you say that, of course, now we have all this misaligned capital, you have all this misallocated capital, you have all this misaligned risk that's priced into the markets. Now, I do disagree that I don't think that the Fed is raising rates to keep labor prices down. That may be his interpretation of it, but we have a labor shortage here in the United States. We don't have an issue with labor. They have the room to ramp up rates because fiscally we're actually in a better shape than people want to admit. we have the lowest debt to debt servicing as a percentage of GDP in the country's history. There's no stress within the banking system. The Fed has plenty of room to raise rates here, and they're deliberately draining dollars from the world. They are deliberately trying to stop the euros, the euro system, what I call the Davos crowd, from controlling monetary policy through the offshore dollar markets. I think they want control of their monetary system back, and I think it's what they have to do in order to even attempt to save the United States from a political breakdown coming into the rest of the decade.
I've noticed that the Fed wants to make a run to the door first and leave the Europeans behind. I mean, that's what allies are for, I suppose. Here, weigh in on that, because it seems to me that can the dollar return? The return of the Phoenix here. I mean, I just don't see it, because the way these sanctions are being stealing people's property without any due process, this ridiculous oil cap thing that goes against market forces. I mean, there is no going back. Pi, 1 minute before we go to the break.
First off, on a real rate of unemployment, it's been in the double digits essentially since the 2008 financial crisis. It just hasn't been credibly reported by the government or by media. Just the sanctions issue and real dollars being closed in a longer term scheme in order to dovetail into a much more traceable digital technology. But on the sanctions issue, sanctions are obviously pushing Russia to cut energy and other exported resources to the West, but they're also allowing the Kremlin to torpedo this 48-year-old petrodollar reserve recycling mechanism, which allows the U.S. to run perennial account and trade deficits, trillions in public and private debt, hundreds of trillions in risky notional derivatives contracts across finance, and a big stick for punishing rogue regimes with cutting off capital, sanctions, food, medicine, and other necessities. Russia's redefining a new global gold standard by tying its ruble to finite gold bullion, oil and natural gas, which will put a very dangerous higher permanent floor price on gold and the ruble, while in turn popping the largest debt in an inverted consciousness bubble.
Hold that thought. Well, I have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on the global economy. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the global economy. Okay, let's go back to Los Angeles. Pi, I want to go back to you. I'm sorry I had to cut you off. We had to go to that hard break. But you were getting into something that I think is quite fascinating. Only a few months ago, I think all of us would consider that the ruble was a soft currency, okay? It wasn't a currency that was particularly sought after. Now it's very different. It's the best performing currency in the world, because it's backed by what? Fill in the blanks for me. Go ahead.
Finite, tangible, hard asset commodities, whether they're monetary commodities in the way of gold, perhaps a lot of silver as well that's not being announced, but foremost, oil and natural gas. Russia sits on the largest natural gas reserves and is the largest producer on the planet, and is, I think, third or fourth as far as oil. So the playbook by John D. Rockefeller and European elites over the prior century plus, they are basically usurping, and that's the core sin, because John D. Rockefeller prescriptively said, quote unquote, competition is a sin. And here the Kremlin has said, okay, well, we're going to go ahead and sin. We're going to outcompete you. And by the way, we have all the natural resources that we need. So they're calling the dollar's bluff over the past 50 plus years after the gold window closed, by basically forcing everybody to price and trade and reserve recycle in dollars by saying that the dollar, what is 12 trillion euro in debt, just to reference Professor Hudson's earlier point, and 29 trillion stated of U.S. National debt. It's incredulous to try and claim that this is going to be the perennial reserve currency standard. So they're calling the bluff. They have very powerful friends in the way of the Chinese, a global South and whatnot. And hence, everything's it's optics. It's a confidence game, and confidence is shifting east. And there's a lot of haste on the West to try and how to try and deal with it.
Okay, let's go back to Michael in New York. Let's talk about the impact of sanctions here. Go ahead.
Well, President Biden and Secretary of State Blinken have said that the war in Ukraine is simply the beginning of a war with Russia that will go on for 20 years. and will extend to China. So they planned on bringing the whole world back into the U.S. dollar area, not only Europe, but also the global south. The problem is that they think that the United States will be the only actor and that other countries will simply react, but keep on doing what they've been doing all along within the IMF and the World Bank and the World Trade Organization. But this is not going to happen. Because if indeed they've declared economic sanctions and war against Russia, President Putin has said, we're going to create a BRICS bank. We're going to create a whole new set of institutions that will operate on very different principles than neoliberal policies. I've described all what I expect to be in my book, The Dawn of Civilization. So The Destiny of Civilization, I guess it will be the dawn of a new one. Because it is going to be a whole new structure of world trade and world finance. And countries are going to find that the only way that they can literally survive financially and in terms of trade is to reorient their trade toward Eurasia, toward Russia, China, Iran, India. And already you have Argentina and Brazil wanting to join BRICS. So while thinking that they are trying to hurt other countries and force them into the U.S. Orbit, the U.S. policy is actually driving them out of it.
Exactly.
Like
You know, Tom, one of the things I think that we've seen with the reaction, the coercion that the West has attempted to force other countries to follow their lead with sanctions, we've come out with a very different scenario. And I would say, I mean, from an ideological point of view, the global South no longer has any respect for the West and its ridiculous ideas and wokeism and all of that nonsense, which I never talk about because it's a waste of time. But they're not afraid of the West anymore. And this is what Michael is talking about, because if you create parallel institutions, you don't need the IMF, you don't need the World Bank, you don't need any of these things here, okay? And why go into their toxic financial system? Get out of it, okay? Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, no, I was going to say exactly that. It's funny. I think that we need to be careful about what's going on here. I don't believe that the Biden administration works for the United States. I believe they're blood traitors to the U.S. I believe they work for Brussels and old European colonial money, including the Brits, including City of London. So when you start to unpack a lot of what's happening here, there's a lot of confusion about what's going on within U.S. policy, right? I do separate at this point out that I believe that the Fed and the commercial banks, typically our enemies, are actually the ones working assiduously to stop this technocratic transhumanist thing that the World Economic Forum and the rest of them are taking they're talking about. That Pi was talking about earlier. So once you get that, you start to realize that, yeah, the global South is not in fear anymore. And I believe that it started with Putin standing up to them over Crimea and then intervening in Syria. And it's all just been downhill since then as they've worked through the Russian Foreign Ministry and others with the Chinese backing them up to, you know, tell everybody, look, we're stronger than you think we are. And I think nothing is more indicative of this than Biden's meeting with Mohammed bin Salman in Saudi Arabia over the weekend. And Biden walked away empty-handed.
That was really pathetic here. Pi, you know, on this program, we've talked about ideology, we've talked about policies, we've talked about leadership, political classes. But let's talk about the people that feel the impact of all of this. Does the industrialized modern West, did they have the wherewithal to go through this transition as long as it takes? It seems to me, you know, Boris Johnson's gone, Draghi's gone, Schultz will be gone by the end of the year. You can bet money on that, okay? I mean, the people are not going to they're not going to accept this. I mean, particularly in Europe, their great calling card is we're rich compared to everybody in the world. They're not going to be able to say that much longer considering the path they're on. Go ahead, Pi.
Yeah, I mean, people have to realize, as I kind of referenced earlier, the 2008 financial crisis was fairly pivotal. It wasn't like resolved and everything kind of went back hunky-dory and we had the quote-unquote largest and longest recovery on record. There were a lot of structural faults that were kind of semi to full permanent and just kind of brushed under the rug. Hence the Gilets Jaunes or Yellow Vest protests across not just France, but quite a bit of Europe, and this is pre-COVID, pre-Ukraine war, really kind of almost expediting the need for pushing forward esoteric mandates in order to revert, you know, you clear the streets through a pandemic, much harder to be rioting in Paris or in Lyon or elsewhere. So that was somewhat effective to a certain extent. The French know their history, they're sober, they weren't fooled. And that sentiment is shared across the global South. I think what we were kind of talking about in the break, as far as, you know, the UK, especially, and then, you know, the Commonwealth states and the US really, you know, Carol Quigley wrote the book, The Anglo-American Establishment, decades ago, because it was an indirect argument that the US kind of dovetailed back under empire in all but name, as certainly as early as the 1913 Federal Reserve Act. So the belligerence is really begging the question over the stakes. Why this severe Russophobia? It's because of what we were talking about earlier, a very potent, very well thought out, very well coordinated challenge against dollar hegemony, against super imperialism, to quote Professor Hudson's earlier text work. And against petrodollar hegemony, which we have to remember, 1973-74, became a plan in large part based on the assumption of a U.S. military dominance. So if anybody falls out of line, we whack them back into gear. That worked for Saddam Hussein's Iraq. That worked for Colonel Gaddafi's Libya. It's not going to work against the massive nuclear powers that just aside from that level of deterrence capability, collectively have a military force numbering in the tens of millions where they needed to be deployed. So it's hence the sense of haste, the desperation, the rage, is because the bluff is being called. And what is going to be the response? It's going to be to head off these approaching hazards. Western central banksters will print their respective national currencies into hyperinflationary oblivion.
Michael, as usual, you want to jump in? Go ahead.
Yes. Well, you've just made the really important point that you call it a recession, but we're still in the aftermath of 2008. There wasn't any recovery from 2008. The situation has got worse and worse in every single country because the debts were not written down. President Obama kept the debts on the books, and the economy was written down. In the United States, in Europe, you had the Greek crisis. Afterwards, you have the Global South running up debt much more. So it's only a pretense that there was a recovery. It's been going down since 2008, and now it's accelerating. And regarding the U.S. stance, people think, obviously, because NATO has attacked Russia, you think of the West as being highly military. But look at the NATO attack on Russia as Western disarmament. They've run out of tanks. They've run out of ammunition. Yep. They've run out of means to fight. So the only way that the West can fight is with atomic bombs. It's the only weapon they have left. No tanks, no rifles, no bullets to put in them or missiles, only atomic weapons. So it comes into the fact that all the United States can do is play the role of wrecker in the world to try to prevent the world from reorganizing along more rational lines.
Okay, well, we're almost out of time. Will this policy succeed? I say it won't. I just hope we can avoid a nuclear conflict. Go ahead, Tom, finish our program off.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that the threat of that is a little low. What I expect here at this next juncture is NATO is trying to figure out a false flag to attack Russia directly and force them again to strike first, because that's the way Putin will operate, so that they can have the moral high ground to then organize something worse than that. They have to cover the fact that the debt is so massive. And the way you do that is you take people to war. The people aren't down with this. And it's very clear across the entire West. Yeah. And I think that there are very powerful forces in the West at this point supporting that notion. And they're doing so at the what to us looks like the giants fighting amongst themselves, but we ants on the ground are going, what the hell is going on?
That's right. This is all about elite agendas. It has nothing to do with the rest of us, gentlemen, or our audience. Gentlemen, fascinating discussion. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in New York, Los Angeles, and in North Florida. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.